Okay. Hello, everybody. As usual, I introduce the speaker today. Andrea is a researcher astronomer at the Observatory of Trieste in Italy, where he got the PhD some year ago. Then he did several postdocs at TAP in Paris. Then in Leiden and in Madrid. I don't remember the order. I just started this morning your path.
That's a correct order.
Until he got a permanent position as astronomer in Trieste, the observatory. Well, since then he's a specialist of the dynamics and structure of galaxy clusters and groups, a leader of the group working on galaxy evolution clusters in Trieste, members or leader and co-leader of several collaborations, in particular within the Euclid collaboration, he's co-lead of some work group, working group on galaxy clusters, to my mind.
Used to be. I left my position beginning of the year.
Okay.
Now is Emiliano Munari.
Okay. Well, still in house.
I'm leading a key project though.
Okay. PI of the Italian LSST team.
Used to be.
Okay. You have to upgrade your CV webpage. For 3 years until a couple of years ago, deputy director of the Observatory in Trieste. Andrea, welcome. You can start when you're ready. I invite people to ask at any time in the next 30 minutes. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So, yeah, as you said, I've been involved in many things. I'm still very much involved in Euclid, but I decided that now that all the things are becoming very, very technical, a young person would be more suitable than me to continue work package. But in any case, now it's time to prepare for some science as well. So that's where I'm spending more time now. But this talk here is about something different, a collaboration which I've been involved since 2013. It's a GoGreen survey, and which I've been involved, as you said, because of my expertise in the cluster dynamics. And what I'm presenting now, I think that this is my second seminar in LAM. First one was many years ago, but in presence. So thank you for the invitation, first of all. And that this is based on a paper which appeared this year in ANA. It's talking about internal dynamics of clusters of galaxies, a redshift between 0.9 and 1.4. It is the list of my collaborators. So, brief introduction for the non-expert in the field. Maybe you're all experts in this field, but anyway. Everything started in some sense by this paper in 96-97 about the universal density profile of clusters, of halos actually. These people, Navarro and White, claim there's a universality in the density profile of cosmological halos. Here you see in the figure that dwarfs, galaxies, and clusters in the simulation have basically the same kind of profile, which is this now known as NFW. And it is characterized, you see the equation here, is characterized by basically two parameters, which are R200 and R-2, where the R-2 is the radius where the logarithmic slope of the density is -2. So basically this profile goes from slope of -1 in inner part and -3 in the external part. So some place in between goes to -2. Or equivalently, you can use these two parameters, M200 and C200. Overall, you can think of the two parameters as one indicating the normalization of the profile. So basically how much mass it is in the halo. and the other indicating basically the shape of the profile. The shape is an FW, but how much it is concentrated with respect to another halo, which is this C200, which is the ratio R200, R-2. The two quantities have been found to be related, at least at low Z. You see here from another simulation how C200 correlate with M200. And when you go to high redshift, the correlation is no longer there, basically because it is understood that C200 is related to the epoch when the halo forms. So when you approach to higher redshift, the formation redshifts of the halos that you identify then are pretty much similar because there's not much time since the Big Bang. Okay, so the interesting thing is that both the NFW model and the CM relation has been verified on real crystal data, but mostly at low redshift, redshift less than 0.5. I'm showing here the mass profile of a cluster from the Clash collaboration, a paper I produced some years ago, showing basically the mass profile here and the ratio between the observed mass profile and the NFW mass profile. So should be around this -1, so it should be around 0 here. And the error bars are pretty large. As you see, it's this gray shading region. It is fair to say that at the current level of precision, you cannot really decide whether NFW is better than other models being proposed, but it's certainly the data are compatible with NFW. Here you show all the lines indicate, all the curves indicate other models, basically. On the right hand side panel, you see the concentration mass relation derived from a nearby cluster from kinematics, basically. That's the Omega Wings collaboration here, paper of mine a few years ago. And you see this red line is concentration mass relation, and the error bars again is pretty large, this is a yellow contour. But you see it's pretty much in agreement in the bottom panel with the theoretical expectation, which are indicated here by this dashed line. On the other hand, the observational terminations are shown here for weak lensing, X-ray, several terminations shown here. In many cases that's been claimed that there was some discrepancy with the theory. The most recent termination, like this one in black, starts to agree much more with the theoretical expectation. And so it is also the relation I derived. So there is some agreement between what you expect from theory and what you observe, at least a low redshift. One other quantity, which goes back from 2001, Taylor Navarro pointed out that when you take the mass density profile of a halo and you divide it by the velocity dispersion profile of the same halo to the cube, you get this quantity, which is so dimensionality is that of a phase space, so it's called a pseudo phase space density profile, and it is a power law with radius. This you see in this plot, which is actually from Dan and McLaughlin in 2005, showing how the observed simulated profile from cosmological halos really obey this power law over a wide range of radii. And why it is considered to be more fundamental, but basically because there's no, there's no scale radius here. So it seems to be, when you find something which is parallel, you immediately think of something which is related to gravitational processes only because there's no radius dependence. So the usual interpretation of this is that it is created by some purely gravitational process before a baryonic process came into effect in clusters or in halos. And so it must be created at a very early stage, perhaps during some baryon relaxation process. But it has to be said that its physical origin is still being discussed, even its physical reality to some extent is being discussed. And recently there was a paper by Stefan Colombi showing that indeed this relation is established very early on in the cluster evolution. So also this relation has been confirmed by data, again in this paper, but also in other papers, been shown that the data here are the colored line and the shaded region are the one sigma interval contours. And the theoretical line are shown in by the dashed line here. And okay, this is for basically one cluster, all galaxies on the top panel, and then if you consider passive of all spirals, it's a bit less convincing. But it, overall, there's agreement also between observational and theory, also about this power law behavior of this pseudo phase space density profile. But again, this is a redshift below 0.5. So of course, it's interesting to look at the higher redshift cluster to see if you approach the stage of evolution where these profiles are not yet established, which would indicate, would allow us to understand something how they are created. So how do you do that? Well, one way to do that is to use the kinematics of galaxies to determine the mass profile, the mass density profile. Basically, the idea is that you have to consider the equilibrium between the attractive force of gravitation and the pressure which is exerted by these galaxies, which has themselves a kinematical pressure, say. They tend to escape the cluster, of course, because of their velocity. So this equilibrium means that by looking at the velocity distribution of galaxies, you can infer something about the potential, gravitational potential of the cluster. But the important thing here is that there is an additional component, that the pressure doesn't only depend on the velocity, but also depends on the direction of the velocity vector. The direction of the velocity vector is essentially telling you about the orbits of the galaxy around the cluster center, which could be more isotropic, more tangential, or purely radial. So these things combine into the Jeans equation, which is shown here. The mass profile is related to the velocity dispersion here along the radial direction, and the number density profile. So basically the distribution of galaxies in the as a function of radius, how many galaxies you have as a function of radius. So these two quantities are here, but there's a third quantity which tells you about the orbital distribution, which is beta, the velocity isotropy profile, which is basically the ratio between the kinetic energy in the tangential component of the orbits and the kinetic energy in the radial component of the orbits. It's one minus this quantity, but for historical reason, we still use this beta. And okay, the situation from an observer is shown here in this plot. The observer only can only look at the projected radius capital R and not to the real radius small r. And of these two velocity components, assuming that the two tangential components are actually identical, there's no reason why you would expect one to be different from the other statistically. We only observe the velocity along the line of sight, right? So it's a projection of these two components. So this gives rise to a problem, which is called the mass anisotropy degeneracy. Basically, you can solve this equation by, say, pumping up the velocity anisotropy and decreasing the mass profile or something different, and you find equally good solution. And it's also known as Jeans madness, because MAD, madness, Jeans becomes mad and cannot solve the equation. Now, there's been several proposals to solve this madness, this degeneracy. And one has been proposed by Gary Mamman, myself, and Gwenaël Bouet, who was a student of Gary at the time, 8 years ago, which is called MAMPOST. And basically, MAMPOST exploits the fact that you can go beyond the traditional approach, which is just using the second moment of loss distribution. But you can use the full velocity distribution, actually the projected phase space, which is shown here, the velocity in the rest frame of the cluster, each point here is a galaxy, as a function of the distance from the cluster center. And basically, MAMPOST is trying to predict, given some models, some input models, which is the likelihood of observing a galaxy in this position of phase space, given this model and its parameters. And there is some, there's been some work showing that MAMPOS is able to break the classical mass result of the degeneracy by this process. And in practice, MAMPOS constrains the mass profile and the velocity of the profile at the same time. Recently, with my student in Argentina, Tania Tagliaferro, we went to more detailed analysis of the performances of MAMPOS. And what you see here is based on two simulations here, the Lucien Blaiseau and Gaea from Hirschman. We investigated how well we can reproduce the profile, which is M true in this, this bottom panel, with the MAMPOS solution, which we assume to be assuming an NFW model. And you see that when you use red galaxies as tracers, the solution is at low radii, basically, it's very close to the true mass profile. When you use blue galaxies as tracers, you have a problem, but we know that. And clusters, fortunately, are mostly populated by red galaxies. Okay, so MAMPOS seems to work. So the idea is that we're going to apply MAMPOS to all the samples we are for which we have spectroscopy. So as I said, you have to assume some models in MAMPOS, parameterized models. So you want to be as generic as possible. So in this work, we consider five different mass profiles. One is the Burkert, which has a core at the center, which is shown here in red. The other is Hernquist, which has the same slope as Navarro-Franke-White in the center, but it goes steeper on the outside. The third one is Navarro-Franke-White, which is in blue, in black here, and it's also shown in this other panel. And then there are some variation of the NFW profile, which is called generalized NFW, with different inner slope going down to a core. So in total, we have a six mass profile. In each of these mass profile, you have two parameters, the mass and the concentration at an overdensity of 200, or equivalently the R200 and then and the scale radius R minus two. But then you also consider some models for the velocity and anisotropy profile. We consider these five models. I'm not going into the details. They are less theoretically motivated than the other model, than the mass profile models, but they are essentially more motivated by what we see in numerical simulations. But there is less work has been done on this beta of R than on M of R. So we consider at least one model in plus. Than usual. And in this case, we only have one free parameter, actually the normalization, beta infinity, or scale radius R beta, like in the Osipov-Merritt model. And so in the end, we run MAMPOS using 30 model combinations, six from mass profile and five from beta profile. And for each of these combinations, we have three free parameters, okay? So we try to be as generic as possible. Now, this is a spectroscopy data set that we're using. It's called GoGreen, Gemini observation of gas in rich early environments. The observation have been completed last year, so the data set is public now. And these were observations done with this multi-object spectroscopy at the Gemini telescopes. There are one in the north, one in the south. And it's kind of a PI is Mike Ballard from Canada, from Waterloo, Canada. And it's a sort of extension of what has been done a few years ago by Muzin et al. With the G-class survey. And so in the end, we combined the two surveys to get a total of 2,300 galaxies. Basically, we measure velocities and we rest frame velocity uncertainties, which are small enough to allow dynamics because basically they are significantly smaller than the typical velocity dispersion of a cluster. In the end, in this work, I'm only using the 14 clusters which have at least 20 spectroscopic members, basically because otherwise it's difficult to do dynamical analysis. In total, I have almost 600 members, above a stellar mass of 9.5 in log, which most of them are within these visual radius R200. The redshift range I'm considering is 0.9, 1.4. And the mass range, as you see, it goes from 0.6 to 11, 10 to the 14. Okay, there is an issue of completeness, of course. Spectroscopic completeness is shown in this panel as a function of the radius distance from the cluster center in normalized units. And you see that when you combine the Go Green and G class in red, you get the highest spectral completeness because Go Green, of course, was an extension to higher redshift, was less complete. So in general, you have to we have to correct for this completeness, which is will characterize for different samples. The crucial thing here is, of course, you have a line of sight projection, so you have to identify the cluster members. This is not a trivial task in general. We adopted two algorithms. One is called CLEAN, the other is called CLAMPS. CLAMPS is published in the same paper as GoGreen, but it's been basically invented for the Euclid collaboration by Emiliano Monari. And they are very different. They are very different. They have very different approaches, these two membership identification. And this is important because you can control systematics much better. CLEAN is most theoretically motivated, and CLAMPS is non-parametric, is mostly based on the density contrast in projective phase space. Okay, there's not much difference in the end in the membership selection between CLEAN and CLAMPS, which is the reassuring. Now, in the end, once you select members, you find out that the clusters have a member of from 27 to 86 members each. So there's no hope that you can do derive the mass profile which with only 27 or even with 86 members. You must stack these clusters together. How do you do that? Well, you do that by assuming that what the numerical simulation tells us is true, that basically the mass profile of massive clusters do not differ one from the other very much. There's quasi homology. And that you can basically use a single parameter to make the scaling, which would be R200. So use R200 to scale the cluster centric distances, and then V200, which is related to R200, so it's the same parameters once you know cosmology, to scale the rest plane velocities. Just to be sure, we consider three different estimates of R200, but we found out that the results are insensitive to this choice. Okay, so this is the stack cluster in projective phase space. These are rest frame velocities. Each point here is a galaxy in this stack cluster, so stack of 14 clusters. And the size of they are all members, but the small size are less likely to be members than the large size dots. Basically, the small size has been selected as members only by one of the two algorithms, not by both. The lines, the curves that are showing here are just to draw the eye. They are not used in the membership selection, but they are what you would expect as an escape velocity if you assume typical mass profile and typical velocity in the profile. So overall, it's what you expect for a relaxed cluster, what you see here. Of course, you might say that whatever you're going to say now, it's not characteristic of any cluster in particular, it's more characteristic of the average cluster at redshift 1.1, which is the average redshift of the samples. On the stack cluster, we first have to divide the number density profile of the cluster galaxies, which are the traces of the potential. What you see here is that these are fits of this number density profile with Navarro-Franke-White models in projection. And as you see, the fits are pretty acceptable. And the concentration that you find, which are called C nu to distinguish from C200, which is the concentration of the mass profile, is the concentration of the number density profile, is around what you expect for a cluster, massive cluster at this ratio, around 3. when you distinguish between quiescent star-forming galaxies, you see quite some difference. Quiescent galaxies are more concentrated than star-forming galaxies. This is not a surprise, a low redshift, but in a sense, it's the first time that you see that at this high redshift in this detail. Definitely, there are still a lot of red galaxies, quiescent galaxies in redshift 1.1 clusters, and they do. You see the classical color density relation. Blue galaxies tend to avoid the center. And this is the mass profile. So what is showing here in the left panel here is the results from MAMPOST. In red, this is the likelihood weighted average of all the combination of models, the 30 combination models that are considered. In black, dash dot, you see the best fit model, so the model that gives you the highest likelihood according to MAMPOST, which is a Burkert model, which is the core model. That's why the mass at the center is smaller here, and then it grows more rapidly. If you assume that if you want to just to know what's the best fit model when you assume an FW, this is the blue line. So basically what you see here is that the best fit model is a bit outside the average of the other models, which is this red line, one sigma contours is in orange shading. And overall, you would say that solution tend to favor slightly more cored profile than NFW. But when you consider the error bars, you cannot distinguish NFW from the average solution. And so overall, you can say that NFW is acceptable, although face value, you would prefer a more cored profile, which has some implication we discussed at the end. MAMPOST gives you a solution whatever is the goodness of the fit, okay? It's maximum likelihood. It says, okay, this is maximum likelihood. I don't know if it's a good fit, but it's the best I can do with the model you provide. To check that the model fit is good, we project the solution of MAMPOST in the observer phase space, actually in this case, in the line of sight velocity dispersion profile, which is shown here by these dots. These are the observed points. We're not using this bean profile to run MAMPOST. MAMPOST is run as a likelihood of the individual galaxies, but we use that just to check that the t-square of the MAMPOST is okay. And you see that, the last point is not used because we only use the data up to R200 because the cluster beyond that might not be well visualized, so you wouldn't apply the Jeans equation. But basically the fit is acceptable. Okay, I have to go a bit faster, I think. Now this is a solution, this is the C200. So this is the MAMPOST solution in green, this shade, this region in green, showing basically systematic and random errors, but basically it's one sigma from in the shaded region. And you see that the solution is around 3, also for the mass profile, as it was for the number density profile. And this is compared here with previous determination from the literature, both from the kinematics here and from lensing and X-ray. Basically, selecting clusters with the same mass range, the same redshift range to do this comparison. And you see there is a good agreement also from other determination. And in the bottom panel, you see the agreement between the GoGreen MAMPO solution and the theoretical values from different studies. Okay, very good agreement. This is instead showing the concentration for the mass profile in black and for the number density profile for all the galaxies in magenta, for the quiescent galaxies in red, and for star-forming galaxies in blue, and also the concentration for the stellar mass profile. Overall, given the error bars in this first panel, you see there's not much difference between the mass profile and the galaxy number density or the stellar mass density profile. Only when you consider blue galaxies definitely are different from anything else because they don't live in the center. Then we also consider the subsamples of our main sample by selecting low mass and high mass cluster, or low redshift and high redshift clusters within our sample. And again, the conclusion are pretty similar. And also you note that the mass profile, we don't see a clear, any dependence of the concentration mass profile in these samples. I mean, the other ones are what they are, so you can do much better than that. But overall, you can say that the number density profile of cluster of galaxies do seem to be quite close to the mass density profile. So this is sometimes referred as the light traces mass solution, that galaxies are distributed like the mass. Then, as I anticipated, you can also, as a byproduct, you can also derive the orbits. This is the ratio between the loss dispersion on the radial component and tangential component of galaxies. And the solution that you show here, that we show here in green, is derived from the Jeans equation inversion method, which I didn't describe. In magenta, you see the interval that it's given by MAMPOS instead directly. They are consistent and overall indicates that the orbits are isotropic near the center and becomes more radial outside. In gray, you see a previous determination based on the G class, and it's consistent with what we find now, also because the samples are overlapping somehow, but the new solution is a narrow error bound. This is also compared to numerical simulation here. And you see where you consider high mass cluster, which is this panel here, you basically see that this profile is very similar to what you find also in simulation. Note that the scale here is different, so it reaches here to 1.4, which will be up here. So perhaps that's a little, given the error bars, they're very consistent, I would say. Okay. The final result is here shown. No, sorry. Before final is shown here, splitting these velocity and isotope profile for the different samples of clusters, low mass, low redshift, high redshift, you don't see any difference. When you split by galaxy population, start forming quiescent here, or low stellar mass, high stellar mass here, you start seeing some difference, suggesting that low stellar mass galaxies are on more radial orbits than high stellar mass galaxies, which seems to be on more isotropic orbits. And finally, the pseudo phase space density profile. This is the observation divided by theoretical expectation. So you would expect it to be around one. And given the error bars, I'm not getting into the details of all these lines. What's important to note here is that the shaded region really encompasses the unity here, meaning that the observational results are fully compatible with theoretical prediction. So in summary, what I show here is that the mass profile or ratio 1.1 clusters are very consistent with theoretical expectation because NFW with concentration of 3 is pretty much acceptable. A phase value, you would prefer a core profile, which would suggest that AGN feedback from the central brightest cluster member could have been operating already. But this is speculation, of course, given the uncertainties. Oh, the other important thing is that stellar mass and cluster galaxies are basically spatially distributed as total mass, which you also see in local cluster. But quiescent galaxies are also spatially segregated from star-forming galaxies, which avoid the center, which is again, as you see, in local cluster. And then galaxy orbits are similar to what you see in numerical simulation, which is interpreted as a combination of collective collision processes that govern the central cluster region, and then smooth accretion processes that occur in the cluster outskirts. In other words, you would look at this profile as a combination of isotropic orbits created by these collective relaxation processes, which tends to increase the kinematical entropy in the system, and so destroy any order motion, which then, if you have a radial motion, would be essentially destroyed. But then the galaxies that enter cluster later on, they go through smooth accretion, they grow through filaments, and so they would be retain some memory of their radial orbital input. And it's telling also that the low mass galaxies seems to be more radial orbit than the high mass galaxies, basically because about downsizing, you would expect these low mass galaxies to accrete the cluster later on. And finally, also this Q of R, this pseudo phase space density profile, seems to is consistent with theoretical expectations. So, and that's my last slide, so I'm almost on time. Overall, I would say cluster ratio 1.1 look very similar to nearby cluster. Now, formed clusters basically not observe a ratio greater than 2. I mean, people claim the ratio greater than 2 is the realm of protoclusters, okay? So that means that basically the internal structure of cluster must form in 2 giga year or less than that. So it must form very rapidly. Now, 2 giga year is very close to the dynamical time of this system of ratio 1.1. So basically, you can say that what creates this structure has to be some process that occurs on a dynamical time. And the obvious candidate is some kind of violent relaxation. Now, the crazy thing, though, is that clusters grow considerably in mass from ratio 1 to ratio 0. So the strange thing is that this enormous mass growth doesn't create a change in internal structure. And so there are two possibilities here. Or either the internal structure is very resilient to merger events, or perhaps the merger events does destroy the internal structure for some time, but this is reestablished in one dynamical time. And this is possible if the internal structure is some sort of attractor, some gravitational attractor. So of course, I'm in Euclid, so the hope is that we can go to higher redshift and do this study to higher redshift in Euclid. And I'll stop here. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Andrea, for this very, very clear and nice talk. Any comment or question already? Someone is clapping. Let me look at the chat. I can start with a very technical question or curiosity. How do you disentangle in observed data the Hubble flow from the peculiar velocity of your galaxy members in your clusters? Is it an issue or not?
Yeah, it is. The point is that it's relatively easy. There's a paper we wrote with Gary and Giuseppe Morante, that was 10 years ago probably, addressing this question, showing that basically it's relatively easy to disentangle the Hubble flow, because it really goes, if you think of the numbers there, it goes beyond, say, 6,000 kilometers per second easily. You look at the projection phase space, you clearly see the Hubble flowing galaxies there. The problem is rather to distinguish real cluster members from galaxies which are in the surroundings, in a large structure around the cluster, which are probably not bound to the cluster, but they're not really outflowing freely with Hubble flow. This is tricky, and in that paper we show that whatever you do, you end up with contamination by these non-members, especially the outer parts. So there are two solutions. You only use red galaxies to do this job. Red galaxies are more likely to have been affected by the physical process in the clusters. Or the other way around, it's essentially relying on numeric simulation. In the paper with my student Tania Tagliaferro, we're showing that in fact, MAMPOS tend to underpredict a bit the mass respect to the true mass. And this is because of this contamination by interloper. It seems counterintuitive, the fact that the mass estimate is an underestimate, but we can talk about that if you wish. I don't want to spend too much time.
Mm-hmm. I see.
It's a technical issue.
Yeah. Thank you, Andrea. Guillaume, you have a question.
Yes, thank you very much for the talk. Yeah, I have a question on the star forming clusters. So you have shown that they have a concentration of order one or even less, if I remember correctly. But so does it mean that NFW profile are irrelevant for such a population?
Yes.
The concentration is too low for...
That's right. That's right. In a sense, what I'm showing here. No, so not here. Okay. The blue galaxies, you can feed them with NFW, mm-hmm. just for practicality. But you can as well feed them with a king profile, with a core profile, whatever. And yes, so the concentration of 0.7 is not something you would expect from field. So this is just for the purpose of the ease of comparing this concentration, you know, 5.7, rather than comparing different models. But yeah. You can easy if you follow my cursor here, you would not actually, I would not actually expect the density to be that high here. It's probably going to flatten out or even decrease in the center. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't really matter in this analysis. Because what I'm considering is the total density profile in the genes analysis. I have not tried, I don't remember if I tried or not, to only consider red galaxies. The point is red galaxies are still dominant in this cluster. Mm-hmm. It might become an issue when you go to Euclid, because then for several reasons, first of all, clusters are expected to host more and more blue galaxies as you go, start forming a galaxy to high redshift. And the other point is that Euclid is basically going to see in the spectroscopy survey only Michelin galaxies because it's a slitless spectroscopy. So then you have to be careful.
So in that case, you would try to fit the star forming cluster with maybe something which is so flat in the inner region. And have a slope of -2 basically in the outer region or something like that.
Exactly. And it becomes even more problematic to distinguish members from non-members. Mm-hmm. But yeah, overall, I would not use NFW for.
And they're also relaxed, this galaxy cluster, the star forming ones.
There's a lot of indication showing that star-forming galaxies in clusters they are in equilibrium with the cluster potential, or at least we consider the population as a whole, and then you can solve the genes equation separately for red galaxies and blue galaxies and find out which are the solutions. They're generally not identical solution, but at least at low redshift, up to the cluster Sinok, okay, you do not find clear evidence that they are outside equilibrium. But I think it really depends very much also on the mass of the, because generally these surveys, spectroscopic surveys that tend to, you select star forming galaxies, but they're still pretty massive because otherwise you don't get a spectrum redshift. And I think when you go to low masses, it becomes less and less of a case. I have an unpublished result from the GASP collaboration. GASP is looking for jellyfish galaxies. Now, jellyfish galaxies are these galaxies which show trays of gas. So there's really some indication they are infalling in the cluster. And I tried to make a genes solution for these galaxies, and there's no solution indicating that probably they are completely out of equilibrium. Mm-hmm. So they are probably on first infall. But this is probably not the case for most blue galaxies, at least not in nearby clusters. Here, I don't know, I didn't try.
Thank you.
Other comments or questions? In the chat, no raised hand. So in this case, I'd like to thanks Andrea again for your participation. And let me advertise the next week seminar by Wenkai Hu, who is a postdoc at LAM here, also among the participants. So see you next week, and thank you again, Andrea.
Thank you very much for the invitation. It's been a pleasure.
Well, bye-bye.
Ciao.
Ciao.
Thank you very much. Bye.